The sweet sound of sports you love from Sling. The collide of football pads. The squeak of shoes on a basketball court. The crack of the bat on a home run. The slice of skates cutting across the ice. But what about this one? That's the sound of all the sports you love, all at once. Starting at $40 a month. Experience it all live with Sling. Sling.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 140. Today is Thursday, May 23rd, as you're joining us on the podcast. We also got the live stream going tonight on Twitter. Thank you guys for joining us. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Mr. Steve Gisuelli. Very excited to talk some pitchers with you guys tonight. And with a very special guest, one that, the drum roll's kind of spoiled on the live stream, but one that we've been excited and teasing a little bit on the show. Steve pulled this one together, and we're very excited because he is a trusted source for pitching insider tips, some exclusive stuff, always bringing the heat. It is Mr. Lance Brozdowski. Lance, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the show, man. How's it going?
Hey, what's up? I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, guys. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. And Lance is joining us now. We had to wait. This is the first time we've ever had to hold off until a MLB game finished. So are you in like the clubhouse at Wrigley or where are you at right now, Lance?
No, I'm in the studios right next to the stadium. So I work primarily like on our pre and post game shows and stuff. So as long as like the game ends and I got my stuff in, like I'm kind of free to just watch our post game and head out and stuff. So it's right next to the park, so it's cool. I can swing over there whenever I want and take a peek at some pictures and stuff, talk to guys and whatnot. So it's a pretty sweet gig. I'm super grateful for it.
That's awesome. And for anybody listening in that does not follow Lance, it's you got to do that ASAP on X at Lance Braz. Lance is player development analyst at the Marquee Sports Network for the Chicago Cubs. And also, Lance, you do a ton of stuff, Lance. I'm sure Steve will wax poetic as well because you're always bringing some great insider tips. But I'll give you a chance to kind of plug where your work is, where people can find you and follow you, because I'm on the Substack as well, and it is great stuff. I know Steve is too.
Yeah. Substack and YouTube have really been my focus this season, so to speak. So that's been my focus. You know, I feel like I came into the season, I had like so many ideas and thoughts, and I like really had to reduce it down just a couple things that I could focus on and get the quality up enough high enough to be happy with what I was producing. So those have been my two things. I mean, the Substack's like a nightly thing I do just to like make sure it's like my box score. Like most people pop open something and watch box scores or rip through box scores. I just do it in a little bit of a different way where it's like very focused on what a pitcher did and if they're changing anything. And then the YouTube is kind of like the more, I don't know if you want to use the word like esoteric, but it's like the broad, like, this is what I've been noticing, or like, I think this. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can break it down in a way that's more visual, so to speak. So that's been my flow this year, and I feel like I'm kind of locked in. So we'll see how long it goes before I break down, but we'll see.
Dude, it really is. It's fascinating. It's awesome to watch how you bounce from kind of micro to macro, where like at the player level, it's so nuanced down to like how they're attacking lefties with two strikes. And then you zoom out to kind of team wide or league wide trends. So it's awesome, man. You're doing fantastic work. Steve, I know we got names. We only got a limited time with Lance, but I'll let you jump in here. Thank you, by the way, Steve, for setting this up with Lance. And how's it going? And I'll open the floor for you to fire some questions off.
Yeah, it's good. And it's funny that Lance hinted at that. Like, my morning box score routine is reading Nick Pollock's pitcher roundup, reading mm-hmm. I still read Raz Ball's player roundup just from a fantasy perspective, too. And I like Gray's writing. I think he's hilarious.
The humor and there is great. I read those. Yeah.
And then three is waiting for my Substack email to come through with Lance's pitcher breakdown, because it's just it's overwhelming. And I have chats with friends who play fantasy and are into analytics. And there's a lot of like, there's so much data that it could be overwhelming, and it's like, all right, how many more stats do we need? I know that tracking came out, and it was like half the industry seemed like they were rolling their eyes at it. Half of them were very excited. And then, you know, everyone was saying, well, we need more information. I think you do a great job of providing that advanced information, but also making it digestible and easy to understand, which is not always easy to do. And honestly, like without like coming off like you know more than someone else, or just like, you know, diving into a stat that not everyone may that everyone understands. So you make it super digestible. It's a great morning read. And like, it's like if there's something interesting that happened with the pitcher, like I know that you're going to be writing about it. Like it was Ranger Suarez this morning, like about how, right, you know, dominant he's been. Like, it's not just, okay, he's been great. It's like, okay, what is he doing to, what adjustments has he made to have the success? And it's a great just way to enlighten yourself about it. So it's awesome. I highly recommend it. I don't miss one. It's for anyone that likes baseball, fantasy baseball, I cannot recommend enough to subscribe to that Substack. So, and thanks for joining. So, yeah,
Lance, I'd be remiss not to fire a couple questions before we get into some analysis stuff, but would love to hear origin story, just how you got you know, analyzing pitchers. You know, I know we've only got 30 minutes, but summary of the origin story. And then I do interviews in my day job for a living, and I always love asking people about moments. And like, if there was a moment that jumped out where it was kind of like, you know, you found yourself pinching yourself that you're like, oh man, I'm in this clubhouse talking to this person. Like, was there a moment when you kind of took a step back and you're like, man, this is cool that this is what I'm doing. So origin story and moments. I want to hear it.
The origin story is weird. I was an accounting major undergrad. So I worked in public accounting for like 3 years. And it was the worst thing imaginable. If anyone does that, it's funny. Like, I'm not saying to those who work in accounting, that's the worst thing ever. I'm honestly like, I admire someone who can hang in that profession. I just like, I don't know. Those hours were nuts. And I was like, if I'm going to be working 60, 70 hours a week, like I at least would prefer it to be on something I remotely care about, as opposed to like doing the books for like Ocean Spray, Cranberry Juice, which was one of the companies I audited. So anyways, it's just like, it's one of those things where it's just, hilarious. I don't know. That's what I did. And then I hard pivoted out and went to grad school, journalism grad school at Northwestern, which was definitely like the pinnacle. So yeah, that was great. It was helping me kind of hard pivot out. And then I really stumbled in this marquee job through like a friend of a friend. They needed someone who knew baseball and could video edit. And I learned video editing and stuff basically on YouTube for the most part, which is funny. Shout out to YouTube University. Grown from there. Like the pitching stuff, I mean, I've always been a huge baseball fan. Like I grew up in Connecticut around the minor leagues. And I mean, everyone has varying interests as I think they grow and stuff. And I was super interested in prospects for a while and did some stuff with Jeff Ponce, who's now with Baseball America. I'd actually worked for Raswell for a period of time. Like, you like kind of find what you want to get into and stuff. And I've just landed on the pitching stuff because I find it fascinating. And I really enjoyed, I think the main thing is like talking to coaches has been my main thing. And a lot of that stuff doesn't really come out publicly because a lot of the conversations are off the record, but it really helps like inform perspective a lot. The moment for me was I have two. One is funny. One is I was a Cardinals fan growing up, which is unfortunately no longer the case because I work for the Cubs TV network. So, yeah, I don't really care about the Cardinals. That's but, okay. Yeah.
Van's a big Cardinals fan.
You're not allowed to. That could change. That could change down the road. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, you just lose it. It's one of those things. Like, I just lost the fandom as I got, like, being around the sport. But I remember one of the, like, I worked for the Associated Press as, like, a stringer for a period of time. One of the first clubhouses I was in at Wrigley Field was the Cardinals clubhouse. And I walked in. I think Albert Pujols was still on the team. I'm blanking on this. I know Wainwright was there. It was Wayne O'Yadi and, like, all these other guys that I, like, remember. And I was like, wow, this is like a childhood moment for me. And then I like had my phone out and I wasn't like recording anything. I just like had the phone out because that was my recording device. This was probably 2017 or 18. And the PR director, I don't remember who it was. He's not there anymore, but he came up to me and he like literally was like, you need to put your bleeping phone away right now. There are no phones allowed in this clubhouse. And I was like, holy crap, man. It's like, I'm a stringer. Like, I need to record this to transcribe. And he's like, you can't do it with your phone. And I was like, what else am I supposed to do with? You know, I wasn't this sassy. I was obviously red and terrified at the time. Right. But anyways, that was the exact moment I lost my Cardinals fandom, honestly. Like, it was in that moment. I was like, no, like, you can't do this to me. I grew up, I slaved over this team. I like cried as a kid. Like, come on, man.
Oh, man.
And then the other moment
don't
is
don't meet your heroes.
Yeah, it's don't meet your heroes. And the other moment is 2 years ago, I got a chance to do Sideline. So be like a silent reporter, like classic, you know, but I did it with an analytics slant, and I've done it occasionally. It hasn't become a regular thing, but stepping up onto like onto Wrigley Field, like 2 seconds before first pitch in a 120 Friday start is like wild. Like, I think I still have the picture from that. I just thought it was one of those things where I was just like, what is going on? And I was terrible in it. I'll tell you that. Like, I did it a little in spring training too. It's very, very hard. So I've been trying to get better at that because I really think that's like probably the 99th percentile outcome for me is to like try to be an analytics sideline reporter. But someday we're working towards it. But that's definitely the good oh boy moment. And then the bad oh boy moment is the Cardinals being angry at me for no reason. So that's what I got.
Kills me. Oh, that's so good, man. Steve, did you want to chime in there?
I just remember going to Wrigley Field as a fan for the first time and being like in awe. When you walk into that stadium. So I can't imagine doing that for the first time as a sideline reporter, trying to balance delivering complicated information
in
a quick hit, right?
Very fast. I've slowed myself down, but people still say I talk fast, and it's like, I don't know, man. I can't go any slower than this.
I mean, I've seen a few of the hits that you've posted on Twitter and stuff for the Cubs too, so and they've been great. So it's definitely an improvement from your first time for sure. I mean, I remember listening back, and it's cringe listening back to our first podcast here, and this is much lower stakes than being on, on the Cubs
side. Means you're growing course, though. It's good. If I look back, I see the same thing. I'm concerned, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's nice on a podcast. Yeah. You have tunnel vision until you like look at the metrics. And if you pictured those people in a stadium, you'd be a lot more nervous than when you're just like in the basement, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But so, guys, it's an absolute treat. And again, you need to be following Lance at Lance Broz. But let's jump in, guys, because I know we wanted to talk about the YouTube, but that's something as well that you guys can go check out. It's a great piece talking about the Dodgers and kind of one of those macro level trends. Dodgers allergic to throwing high fastballs. So I think you even cite in there that Nick Pollock, who's our fearless leader here at Pitcherless, talks about, high lock, high fastballs, low breaking stuff with the Blake Snell blueprint. And the Dodgers, for all their, touted to be great, smart organization as it relates to developing pitchers, everything of the sort, they are not really throwing high fastballs. They're throwing outside stuff. And you kind of break that down, Lance. I know we don't have time to cover the whole thing, but want you to, I guess, just kind of summarize what you found there, and also kind of your approach to something like that. So we can start with the macro, and then I promise for the listeners, we got four player names that we'll kind of rifle through as well and talk about some breakdowns. But would love to hear you talk about this YouTube piece to kind of showcase your type of work there.
Yeah, I mean, it was honestly a counter to hearing Pollock talk about high lock a ton. Because, like, I really think, like, and I've been meaning to come on the craft with him, too. That's been something I think we're going to eventually do. We just haven't gotten around to it. But, that would be super fun. But yeah, I mean, Hylock, I get, like, it just makes a lot of sense. I even have support in the video for it from a slug and whiff and everything standpoint. I've seen it in certain orgs, like the Guardians of the other team that do, which I don't really mention in the video, but they also don't throw a ton of fours up. So with the Dodgers, it's so glaring to me because they're such a sharp org that I just refuse to believe that they're doing it without intent. So I just try to come up with a couple of reasons as to why after talking to some people about it. You know, I think there's a reason to believe that it, from like a tunneling perspective, which is a word that I still think we play around with the meaning of in the public space. I have a very specific definition of it. I purely think it's just location based. I don't really think there's as much like pitch interaction going on, but in a way I think there is pitch interaction because of the location, if that makes sense. Like, I think like the root of tunneling is location rather than like, oh, it tunnels really well because it doesn't have a lot of movement off the fastball. You know what I mean? So like, I don't know. It's like a weird concept. I've tried to do some videos on it. I'll probably do another one on it. But I just think with the fastball away, potentially it helps a lot of their sliders, which are usually not big. They're trying to get to those sliders most of the time. The one that I've actually gotten the most feedback on that it seems like people believe the most is actually just a pure count leverage one. If you just think about the natural miss of a fastball for most guys, it's usually up into the arm side. So if you're putting a target up top, you're missing above the zone, your probability of strike is probably below 1%, called strike, or foul ball, really. And for away, if you think about that same miss, you have a stronger chance of like clipping the top of the zone or clipping like top left quadrant away from a righty. And although that does expose you to more risk middle of the plate, I just think the idea of like winning 0-0-1-1 is definitely something teams think about. And I mean, like, Foolish Baseball did a video on this, like, count leverage is everything. I do think, like, at the end of the day, like, it's really hard to, like, have an overarching philosophy that isn't, like, you have to get it into 1-2 counts and you have to get into 0-1 counts. So that's kind of the idea behind it. You know, I get Nick's point. I do think it makes a lot of sense. I've gotten on this kick recently of variation of location on individual pitches, though. I noticed this with Ranger Suarez in my Substack post, too. He throws his sinker away to righties early and then inside late. I think it's such an old school idea. It's funny that I've come around to this, but I do really think I want to know whether there's research on this. I'm not a huge like nerd research guy, so I tend to defer a lot of that. I'm more like an interpret and communicate guy. So I'm curious if anyone's done like research on pitches having multiple locations, whether it be count based or just the guy likes to throw it in two spots, and whether that helps in any way. Like Assad does it with his cutter. He throws that in and out. There's a lot of guys who like can split plates with one pitch. I've always wondered whether you just count that as two pitches, you know? So it's just one of those things where like, I think it just makes a pitcher better in my opinion, if you're able to dot away and up, you know, like these guys, the Dodgers still go up a lot of the time for their four-seam swing miss. It's just early count. I don't think they want swing miss. I don't think they care whether it's a swing and miss at the top of the zone. So they just don't throw it there. And they do have some guys that throw it there, right? Like Emmett Sheehan and Landon Knack have the kind of fastball that works there. But in other respects,
as you were saying, that's because they're a little bit more like flat, right?
Super flat, with their
shape as well. Yeah.
I just think the average guys, they're like, don't do that. Just give me a strike and then we'll figure it out late. So
what's cool, you'd say like interpret and communicate, but I think it's also cool that it's like challenging assumptions and, you know, even the bat tracking data that just came out and hearing, we were talking last week about Alex Chamberlain's tweets of like, you know, bat tracking for batters is tired. Bat tracking for pitchers wired, like looking forward to what's next for the kind of this frontier of data visualization and access. But I think it's a cool point you brought up that like, if you go to one pitch in multiple ways, that could almost be classified as two pitches. And it seems like down the road, that'll be an easier thing to track and monitor of, you know, who uses one pitch in a way that it's a weapon in different ways. But yeah, it's super fascinating. And again, you guys should go out, check that YouTube link, because it's an awesome way to, I think, as you've mentioned in the past, Lance, kind of zoom out and look at big trends as opposed to just the players. But Steve, you brought a short list of players, and we got kind of inspired by the Substack. We got an ace, a riser, an underperformer, and then a prospect. So we'll try to move through these quickly. But Steve, why don't you start us out with Tarek Skubal, who is obviously having a great breakout year despite tonight. He had a little bit of a rough outing against the Royals. But give me your kind of slug on Scooble and then kick it over to Lance to hear his take on him as well.
Yeah, I think Scooble's a fascinating take. And of course, I put together this rundown earlier this week, and he had probably his worst start like since he came back from last season, since he's been amazing. And I just think that he's such an interesting case study in the first one that I wanted to look at because, yeah, Scooble was a pretty big prospect, and he kind of took like this linear route to being an ace that we don't really see. Like, it was just a slowly but surely steady progression. Yes, there was a big injury in there from 22 to 23, but he just steadily improved his K percentage every year up until including this year. Decreased his walk percentage, decreased his ERA, all of his ERA indicators, slowly went down over the last few years until he became arguably one of the best pitchers in the game. So it's like, you don't really see, like, you know, Corbin Burnes was kind of a guy that, okay, he unlocked the cutter and then became an ace and it all clicked.
Exploded.
Scooble, it's not really as clear as that to me. So I really wanted to get Lance's thoughts on like how this progression has happened and then maybe what we could look for to see like who's the next, like, you know, it's hard to, you can frame everyone who's the next X, but I guess what made Scooble click and become this amazing starter.
Yeah, super broad. I think it has to do with his arm angle and slot and lowering it over time. I think at least he's lowered it over time. Just remembering, I actually had a conversation with Robin Lund, their assistant pitching coach, at like a conference this offseason. He was a really cool guy. He comes from Iowa, which has produced like a lot of pitching coaches and strategists and stuff. Yeah, Scooble, I mean, he's just a really good pitcher. Like, I think the reinvention, so to speak, of that changeup was huge for him over time. Like, actually getting that pitch to somewhat match slot of fastball, throw it a ton in two-strike counts and neutralize righties. The thing for me that is interesting this year, and I'd say to some extent, like, if I had to describe my Substack, it's more just, like, me pointing out interesting things. And I know sometimes people are like, I need more actionable fantasy advice, which I totally understand because I'm on a fantasy podcast right now. But a lot of the times, like, I don't know. You know what I mean? I just find things interesting. I want to point them out. And like, I'll think about them. And sometimes if I have a take, I'll put it in there. But with Scooball, he has really backed off his slider as like a strikeout pitch. So I just confirmed the usage here. I wanted to see if it was actually down. But he threw that thing like almost 20% of the time in two strike counts last year. And this year to righties, it's down to like 5-6%, which is interesting to me. And he's also like jacked up the sinker. So I this is one of those situations where it's working, you know, and it doesn't really seem like there's any reason to push against him. But I would love to talk to him and ask why he made these changes, because they're not super apparent to me. But I also love when like a pitcher is really good and then just is still really good in a different way. And that's what I think we're running into with Scooble, where I know Saris mentions this with like Luis Castillo, where it's like, oh, it's four-seam sink, slider, and change. He's got plus command on everything. He can kind of just like do whatever he wants, even to either hand it. And say, like, he'll go right changeups if he wants, and he'll go slider to lefties if he wants. Like, he can flip those pitches around in a way that really works because his command of them is so good. And like, I wonder whether we're opening up a can of worms with Scooble, where like down the road, it's just, oh, he can go four-seam or sink or slider or change, and he can just do it to either hand, like to righties, in any way he wants based on matchup and stuff. And that could really push him deep into like the postseason to be a challenging pitcher. So, yeah, I'm a little not like concerned, but perplexed as to why some of these changes were made. Like, he's really leaning on a sinker this year, and it's working. You know what I mean? It's just, that's not as big of a swing miss pitch for him.
It's usually the opposite, right? Like, you unlock strikeouts with some sort of breaking pitch, usually a slider nowadays, right? So it's interesting how, and there hasn't been like a drop in overall K rate too. It's still like,
The slider's gotten better. 32%, early count, and he's throwing it up in the zone now. And it's swing misses higher than it was last year. He's tinkering, man. I love it.
I mean, it's like you said, that any organization wants to get ahead in the counts. One thing, just scanning the numbers, his first pitch strike rate is up 10% this year. So it's something he's doing really well mainly from that slider, and the changeup is still great, as you mentioned, but that is Scoobal. We've got a riser as well that we want Lance to weigh in on, but we got to take our first ad break. We'll be right back after this.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear. Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
Have you heard? Sling TV offers the news you love for less.
Hey, wait. You look and sound just like me. I am you. I'm the same news programs on Sling TV for less.
You mean you're me, but for less money.
A lot less. I'm all the favorite news programs and more on Sling TV starting at just $40 a month.
Everything great about me, but for less money?
Which makes me greater, don't you think? Get the news you love and more for less.
Start saving today. Visit Sling.com to see your offer. Sling.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right, so switching over to Garrett Crochet, who's our riser. Steve, again, I'll give you first crack here because you threw him on the rundown. I know he's obviously having a breakout season, had another good start just recently, and now we're looking at a guy who's pretty much an SP1 to date this season, which is crazy to say because he came out of nowhere. But Steve, why don't you intro and then hear what Lance says for Garrett Crochet, obviously. With the White Sox, it'd be interested if he got moved, but I think you got to hold on to a guy like that.
Yeah, I just have no idea where this sort of came from. Like, I know he was a big prospect coming up, and it just seemed like he was destined for the bullpen just based on the innings counts, right? Like, I think he had less than 70 innings total from, like, 2020 to 2023. It's just absolutely crazy. It was closer to like 80, but still. Mm-hmm. And I know there was some hype around him in the preseason, and there were some interesting things. It's like, oh, Garrett Crochet is going to start now. Like, how is that going to go? And I think it's gone better than absolutely anyone's could have imagined. And it seems like it's all based off of that cutter, but I think his fastball's gotten better. His changeup's gotten good in recent starts. And, you know, the stuff. Plus numbers on the cutter don't jump out, but that seems like the key. So I guess you wrote a lot about Garrett Crochet early in the season, especially. And then there was even a dip where I think he was dropped in a lot of fantasy leagues too a few weeks ago. And now people are regretting that after the last five starts. So I know you wrote about him a lot, Lance. Curious to find out what you took away from the look into him.
Yeah, no, I was stunned at that drop. Everyone dropping it. That made no sense to me. It's like we have stuff plus and these other things for a reason. Like this dude had plus stuff and was kind of commanding it. And it's like, well, why are we backing off him? You know what I mean? Like it made no sense to me whatsoever. I've been a huge fan of him. Like I I don't know where it came from either. And the main thing that I don't know where it came from is the fact that he's holding Velo for like deep into games. Like they actually come to Chicago, I think, next week. And I'm definitely going to try to grab him and chat. Nice. And be like, what did you do in the offseason? Because like, if you're a reliever and you're throwing 97 and you could just hold that for six innings, like just do it. Like you're like five times more valuable as a starting pitcher than a reliever. This makes me think like Mason Miller. Like, I don't know. Like, I want Mason Miller to be a starter. Like, I understand he's the best reliever in baseball, but like, I wish that dude was a starter through and through. It'd be so much more productive, I think, for the organization from an upside standpoint. Unless they're just trying to ship him out. But anyways, Crochet, the cutter's cool. He's also increased the usage on the cutter. That's becoming like his main pitch now. He's not really throwing that sweeper anymore. The sweeper's nasty. I just wonder whether they don't entirely love it versus opposite handedness and dropping the usage. You know, it's kind of more like a flash show me pitch. But yeah, he's filthy, man. Like everything here is good. Like it's, you could argue the fastball shape isn't like incredible, but it's hard enough where I, you know, buys down the shape cost, so to speak, of needing to be really good carry. The cutter's like added drop as he's progressed throughout the year too, and he's stayed at velo. So like the grade of that, I think on a rolling basis from a stuff plus perspective, is probably ticked up. It's also just eating righties alive. Like, what he's got, like a 42% swing miss on it. I'd say it's like a borderline slider. They're classifying it as a cutter because it's hard. Mm-hmm. This gets into like all the distinction between like what do you want to call an individual pitch shape. But yeah, I mean, he's throwing more changeup too. Like, I wouldn't have guessed that he, like, beginning of the season, I did a little breakdown on him where I was like, yeah, this is pretty much for real. Like, I love him. And at the time, he threw like no changeup. They were all terrible. So if you told me in like a month that he'd get the feel for the changeup to the point now where he's throwing it more than a slider in May to righties, like that's like a ooh, like that's like a holy crap to the league, watch out, you know? Like I thought the changeup was fine, but he had no feel for it. It's still out of zone a ton, but I love this guy. Like I think he's a frontline guy. You know, I don't do pitcher ranks specifically, so I don't know where I'd have him. Mm-hmm. I wish I had more exposure in some of my fantasy leagues with him. Unfortunately, I just don't. I actually ended up going for Jared Jones in a bunch of leagues late as like a bench stash, and that's worked out. So I don't feel too bad that I didn't add Crochet as a stash, but yeah, he looks great. Like I see zero room for concern here at all. I think he's an ace.
It's just the innings at this point, right? I mean, he's already at the high that he's thrown.
What's the precedent of this dude throwing 97 through seven innings for 150? Like I've no clue where it came from. Maybe it's just always been in the tank and like no one let him do it. The fact that he kind of can command the ball at this velo and hold it is like crazy to me. Like, this is the problem with projecting prospects. It's like, you can show me the guy. Like, you'd be like, this guy isn't throwing, he's a reliever right now, but actually, if you stretch him out to six, he'll zone the ball the same rate and actually better than he was as a reliever. And he'll hold it.
You talked about, you talked about that with Jones when you did like your Jones break. It's like, yeah, I was high on this guy, but you also don't know that he's going to come in and have now this amazing command that he never really showed before.
And like the fastball was just better. And it's like, okay, well, if you told me, like, if you take any prospect and give him 2 inches of vertical from the same release, like, he's just going to be a better prospect. Like, very rare, especially if you're holding arm slide release consistent. Like, that's the problem with prospect projection. It's just, it's impossible. It's you're just going to miss all these guys.
But it's also what makes this game great and the analysis of it great. So,
It really is. Yeah. I mean, the extension too for both of those names, Jared Jones, Garrett Crochet, is you know, close to 7 feet, which to me is starting, seems like a subtle trend that like I might be chasing more extension specialists too, with especially if the velo's up there. So Lance, I know our time is short with you. I think
we can keep
Steve,
it going
if you're
longer,
comfortable
if you
with
let's
it.
Let's do it. Let's wrap.
Yeah, I love it, man. I was just going to say, Steve, if you're cool busting out of the rundown, maybe we just do some quick hit Q&As with Lance before we release, or do we want to stick with some
if you got time for one more guy, Lance, let us know. If not, we could
hit. Yeah, let's. I got another 10 here, so let's go another 10. Okay, so you guys allot the time as you feel necessary.
Cool. Love it, man. Okay, well, this one I can set up because last year I was all over this undervalue of Kevin Gausman. This year I moved away as the stock went up. But I did not predict this coming. A 42 innings, 4.89 ERA, an xERA of 5.38. The strikeouts have, by his standards, evaporated. It's a 22.6% K rate. And it's just kind of a head scratcher. The four-seamer actually has a higher CSW than it did last year. So with Gausman, you quickly move to the splitter, right? And it's like, even looking at the splitter, like that seems to be the culprit where the whiffs are down a little bit, but the results on the baseball card just don't seem it's again perplexing as to like what do we point to with Gausman suddenly looking like an ordinary pitcher when we were signing up for this guy to be an ace, and for years and years we've accepted that he's going to have one of the best 15 K rates in the game as well. So Lance, would love to hear your take on Gausman when you're kind of looking under the hood here.
Yeah, I wish I had a better like delivery. I feel like the other two guys, I had like things that I was like interested in and poked on. He's just giving up more damage. Like I haven't really noticed a dramatic change in shape. There's not a drastic usage shift. He's never really like his fastball grades well-ish, right? I think off the top of my head, based on looking at the shape, like 94, 5.8 release, good extension. Like he's up to almost 18 vert. Like that's probably like a near plus fastball. It's just getting pounded. And that's always, I think, to some extent, maybe been his issue. I'd have to jump back a couple years to kind of see.
Yeah, he's always had fastball issue. But the splitter's been so good that I think the two played off of each other and definitely made the fastball play up.
Yeah, and we've seen that with a lot of different guys. Like,
yeah,
you know, one pitch is so good that it forces the other pitch to be better. You know, like I think this happened with Shota and his splitter. Like, I don't know if his splitter is actually great. I just think the fastball's so good that like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter what else is thrown. You just have to like gear up. Like this little argument, like Spencer Strider slider is actually not that good of a pitch. Hot take, but it's so good. It works so well because of the fastball.
I love that.
You know? So I think that you run into situations like that where you just get one pitch that's so dominant, but his fastball's getting crushed by lefties this year. You know, like he's trying to go away with it. It looks, I mean, like I think that's always been his location. Like he's just getting pounded in the zone. Like I don't, there's not something here for me to be like, oh yeah, that, you know, like I just think he has to change something. Like what do you guys have anything here that's better than me?
The two biggest concerns for me are, or it's one concern, but on two different pitches, it's the put away percentage. So the amount of getting called strikes when, or strikeouts when you have two strikes. On the fastball, it went from 25% down to 17%. On the splitter, it went down from 24% down to 16%. So he's lost like, you know, 8 and 7 percentage points on put away percentage for those two pitches. That's his bread and butter for strikeouts, right? Like you would either see that high fastball that people would swing and miss on with Gausman, or the splitter deep down that they would swing over. And those whiffs aren't happening anymore, which is, when you look at the swing strike rate, yeah, it's down. That's the chart I have up here on the stream, but it doesn't look too bad, at least on an individual basis. But then when you look at, so he's getting whiffs in other counts, but he's just not being able to put guys away with two strikes. Mm-hmm. It's just very, very strange for me. I thought that he was going to be like, you know, I know he had that injury in spring training. I thought he was going to be like a great discount in fantasy drafts, like kind of like Wheeler was a year or two ago when he had that concern and fell in drafts. Like I was like, you know, I'm normally not in on Gausman in the second or third round price, but he was falling like the fourth or fifth. It's like, all right, you know, if he misses a start or two, that's fine. And he even came back. I don't even know if he missed a start. They just put him in the fifth spot in the rotation when they need the fifth starter. And it's really, I mean, there's been some signs he was all right his last start, but it's still kind of concerning, I guess. And I don't really know if we have a great answer for what to do with Gausman here.
This could also be one of the situations where he's just IL'd in like 2 weeks, and he's like, I've just been dealing with this the whole year, and didn't tell you guys. And like that stuff I hate. Yeah. It's hard for me to be like, his fastball's getting crushed in the zone. And like, does he throw more sinker to righties? Like that pitch just seems like it's been okay, and he's got a pretty good command of it. Like maybe you just rip sinker split to righties. Like I struggle a little with what to do here. I honestly like I hate hoping for injuries, but that would help explain a bit. If he's just like, yep, just been dealing with this. I'm gonna shelve it for 2 weeks and then come back. You know?
If he hasn't been, I mean, he did have the injury in spring.
Yeah exactly. So is that lingering? Right. Like I don't know per se, but
yeah, velo's down just a little bit as well, which sometimes can be like a tip off there, but. Yeah, it is tough to make sense of. Well, that's Gausman. We don't need to linger there. I think just from jumping off Rondown, my question, Lance, you know, you're watching pitchers night in, night out, and I feel like with the amount of breakdowns you have, you probably are familiar with like the industry darlings, right? You know, Jared Jones was one of them late in the preseason, but still kind of came out of nowhere. This season, is there any pitcher that comes to mind that you're particularly high on that maybe you know, the numbers haven't kind of come out yet to where, like, I guess it's a sleeper for you in plain sight right now, that you're kind of like, I like what he's doing, even if the results aren't following. Not to throw you on the spot, but I'm just curious if there's any guys that come to mind that you think there's potential here despite what their surface numbers are.
I still like Hunter Brown, which may be masochistic of me, because that dude has had a terrible season. But I still think, like, the raw material there is good. I really like what I saw from Tyler Megill. That was an interesting kind of, I do the pitcher note stuff, and like sometimes I just don't get to certain guys, so I'll check it out when I get back to him for a second start. He started and I just didn't look at him that day, and then he went on the IL and we haven't seen him since. So this is like my first time looking at him. I knew he had the split, but I like some of those changes. Like the cutter there was really good. So if he's available in a league on the fantasy side, I would definitely try to get him. I'm not sure about 12 team, it depends on like the depth of your bench, but 15 team for sure. I think I got him in two 15 teamers. I paid like 20 to 30 in Fab in this most recent cycle for the two start, which is, and we'll see how that goes. But
yeah,
I actually I really like what I saw. So I like him. I don't off the top of my head have one that I'm like, this is my guy. Like I know like some of the analysts have certain guys that they've like latched onto. Like
no, Hunter Brown's a great one because that's a 7.06 ERA right now. And didn't he do something? I thought he did something unique recently.
Yeah, I got a video coming out on that next week.
Yeah, moved.
About like tinkering in season and whether it's cool for guys to make drastic changes in seasons. I've heard some varying thoughts on it from different staffs and stuff I've talked to. He moved on the rubber, started throwing a sinker, eliminated his cutter to righties, started throwing a slider to lefties. Like that feels like one of those moments where it's like, I need to do everything different, not just one thing different, but everything different. Yeah. And like, I don't know if it's worked. Like he's been okay, but I like those in-season adjustments. I think teams should be honestly a little more aggressive with them. I just think orgs are so risk-averse sometimes that you'll take the guy who's like a 4-5 ERA and underperforming, and you're just like, yeah, he's fine. But like the guy, I almost like enjoy looking at the guys who have like 6+ ERAs in prior years. I did this with Brady Singer in the offseason, and I was like, oh, he'll be better. Like there's no chance he puts up a 6+. Like the Royals, I thought, were kind of on the swing up in terms of having some smart, sharp people there. And like he's been good this year. And like I kind of don't know how. Like he's thrown a little more four seam, but it was one of those Chris like weird bets.
You were all over the Chris Bubich one last year too.
He like completely reinvented himself. But I'm curious to see who's going to be the guy with like a 7 ERA this year.
I mean that's a fun task to do, and it leads to some good guys. Like I remember like Lucas Giolito was like the league worst ERA. Corbin Burns too. Like. You know, I joked around. It's like, hey, you can kind of just draft the guy with the worst ERA who's qualified, and you're probably going to do pretty good.
And those draft holds, man, you get laid enough. It's like, I would take those guys over the prospect. Like, at least I know he's pitching. I have Brady Singer in a bunch of draft holds. Not that I'm good at draft holds. I'm actually terrible at them. But like, I have Brady Singer everywhere because I was like, it was like 47th round. And it's like, do I want the prospect who has a 2% chance of debuting and I don't know if he's good? Or like Brady Singer, who could be a 6-ERA pitcher, but at least I'll get some usable starts. And like, I feel great about the Brady Singer pick, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Steve, one last one for me.
Who is your, when a guy's on pitching, whether you write about him or not, who is your favorite pitcher to watch right now? In the MLB season this year,
it's George Kirby right now, because he's been up and down. I think to some extent, I've been trying to like watch what he's doing, but I do enjoy watching the pure command guys a little more. Honestly, not pure command, but like he's velo mixed with command, so he's kind of like cheat code in that respect. But I like seeing what he's doing from a sequencing and location perspective, AB to AB. I will admit I've watched some Cole Reagan starts this year, and he's been really fun. I do struggle sometimes enjoying lefties because of the camera angle though. It's just sometimes tough to like actually appreciate movement, especially when you like sit behind home and watch guys. Like I had a chance to do that a lot in spring training and watch like Steele and JP Sears and all these other lefties. Shota at Insulin Park in Wrigley, or the Wrigley of Arizona, I guess. I don't know if they call it that, but like those, like you appreciate lefties differently when you see them from behind home. Whereas like broadcast cameras generally don't do it justice. Like you don't really know the ball's moving. You kind of see velo differences and guys look silly, but like it's super fun to watch lefty. So I think I lean towards watching more righties just because I like see ball movement and see like what they're doing and where their misses are a little better. So Kirby's my guy right now, but it's a weird one because it's like he's been super swinging up and down. So he added the cutter, playing around more sinker there. So yeah, it's like I want to see.
He's also a guy that seems like he could add a pitch like whenever he wants. Yeah, like he threw a knuckleball that was like amazing out of nowhere last year. So he seems like a perfect kind of guy for the lens that you're looking through. So that I appreciate it, but it shouldn't be surprising. He is awesome to watch and one of the masters of like tinkering and adding stuff and adding wrinkles. So yeah, definitely appreciate that for sure.
Awesome. Well, Lance, thank you so much again for coming on. We'll release you. Steve and I will hang on for the last like 20 here, but you guys again, follow on Twitter at Lance Braz and the YouTube channel as well. And then the Substack, do not miss it. This is where these daily pitcher, deep dives, honestly, with some of the stuff Lance has talked about. LanceBraz.substack.com. But Lance, thanks again so much. This was a blast, man.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care. See ya.
Thanks, Lance. Appreciate it.
Steve, you're on fire with the guests, man. This is great. We're going to have to break it down, and we still got some names, and we'll kind of open it up and go loose. But we got to take our second ad break. We'll be right back after this.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear. Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
Once upon a time, three bears found a golden-haired guest who wouldn't leave their home.
This Dunkin' Cold is just right. Mm, and this Dunkin' Cold is just right.
Should we introduce ourselves?
No, Barry. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug, but I ended up connecting to the world around me. A world where each sunset was painted, where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Steve, your reactions to hanging with Lance, that was a lot of fun, man.
No, man, it was awesome. Yeah, really appreciate Lance taking the time and coming on. I know he's jam-packed, busy guy with all that he does for the Marquee Network, and then, you know, on his own to do that stuff. Like, it's a lot that goes into it, right? Like, you know, I think about having to write an article for Pitcher List every now and then, the amount of research that goes into it. And he does one of those in detail every day on, you know, a handful of pitchers. So it's a lot of work, and it's great stuff. And he's, you know, you definitely see what he gets out of it with the product that he puts out. So, yeah, I don't miss a Lance recap, pitching recap or video. So
yeah,
it's appointment TV for me. Yeah. Yeah,
it is. We wanted to make the most of our time with them. So we kind of rushed through the intro, but man, like, I think it was last year, Steve, where it was like, it seemed like every, not only every analyst, but every pitcher that was doing something very interesting, when you would kind of crawl Twitter and look for like, you know, what's happening behind the scenes, and you're thinking you're going to get like 140 characters on a tweet, and then he would have these screenshots of the notes with like size font and these, like, in the stuff that he was including in these notes were not like other like honestly, it was only like Nick is what comes to mind, like Nick Pollock type of thing, where it's like,
and Nick does, you know, every single pitcher, so it's not necessarily as, I mean, not that Nick's, I read that every day too, and it's amazing, and Nick does it every single day for every starter. Lance does a deeper one on it's usually three or four guys,
right? Yeah, kind of cherry picking.
I mean,
yeah,
it's still,
but it was it seemed like from last season till now, it's kind of been starbursts of like being referenced on CBS, you know, by Nick, by Eno, and then all over Twitter. You know, I'll admit, I my experience with Lance's stuff, his advice and tweets, everything was on Twitter before I even realized he was with Marquee and the Cubs and everything. And it's like, dude, he's in so many places that I know he's got aspirations.
I remember now he said it, like I remember seeing all his like breakdowns on Razzball too. Like that's where his name first came up to me too. He did write for Razzball for a while there too, which is great. And you know, I hinted at it with Lance.
Prospects Live co-founder.
Yeah. I hinted at it too. Like a lot of times when you're talking about pitch metrics and break, it could seem like just a drivel of like numbers and stats that you don't understand. And I think Nick and Lance both do that, both make it consumable, which is not the easiest thing to do when you're looking at like raw pitching movement. And it's like, wait, what is vert again? Like, you know, you're not asking yourself that question.
No.
Cause they just break it down so well. And Lance does an amazing job of that. So it was absolutely awesome to have him on talk pitching. Kind of like a starstruck moment for me, just because, you know, I know that he said, and I get it, like people want more of a fantasy twist towards it, but like this is the raw data that is going to help you be a better fantasy player. Like,
yeah,
you know, I grabbed Jared Jones in the last round on the wire because of Nick and because of Lance and what they saw in spring training with him, right? Like, these guys are like they didn't say, oh, this is my sleeper, you know, like it's not that, but it's the raw data to see why someone could be good, and they consume that and communicate it really well, like Matt said his goal was.
Well, and every now and then, you know, Nick certainly there, Eno and Lance I think is in that group that you come across baseball minds in this industry that aren't just for fantasy, but it's like there's organizations that could use that, like the type of digging in that some of these guys do out there, which is so cool when you kind of see the crossover of fantasy and reality when it comes to this game we love and the sport we love. So yeah, a lot of fun there, Steve. Now we can kind of open it up, but I did swap out, way overdue, Jack Leiter is my prospect for the name you threw on this rundown here, David Festa. Now, I know there's question marks around if Festa will get a crack in 2024, but for the Twins pitching prospect, talk to me about this guy, because the strikeout numbers are like eye-popping, and talk about searching Twitter, like some of these videos out there. He just looks like he's dominating batters. So I would love for you to make me feel better about this ad. Even if maybe from a redraft standpoint, it's a little bit of a pipe dream that he'll get a shot this year.
Yeah. I also recently made the switch to, have David Festa, or, I think Christian Scott was a guy that I had in my minor thought that opened up, added Festa. The guy who first put him on my radar was, Thomas Nestigo, guest of WAF 2 weeks ago now, was it last week? I think it was 2 weeks ago. And he just brought up the fact that he's sort of been breaking out and putting things together in the minor leagues. Like the strikeout numbers are eye popping. The walks are concerned, and what really put him on TJ Stats radar was the fact that he had a 3-start stretch. Prior to the most recent one, with 14 innings, 28 Ks, and just 5 walks. And that was after walking at least 2 guys in his first 4 starts. That also included a 3-walk outing and a 4-walk outing. And he wasn't able to go past 4 innings. He finally started to put together. His last start wasn't great. It was four innings, four strikeouts, two walks, and two runs, give a homer. Seem like there's a homer problem, too. There's been there's been six homers already so far in his 34 innings in the minors. But, yeah, I think Eno talked about it on Rates and Barrels, too, when they were talking about some pitching prospect stashes. There's not really many now that Skeens is up, there's not really many pitchers that don't have some sort of flaw, at least as a prospect, right? Like Jacob Mizrowski's kind of walking the world. Mm-hmm. There's been some injuries, with Cade Horton, his velocity's been down a bit. And I don't know if he's been injured, but some injury concern. Even Festa, he has sort of the walk problem too, but he's in a spot where he had a 10, an 8, and a 10 strikeout game. A few more of those, he may be knocking on the door because he's 24 years old and the Twins need all the help they can get. So not necessarily all that. That's probably a little facetious. Simeon Woods Richardson has done a good job, but I wouldn't see them holding him down if he continues to strike out the world in the minors.
Yeah, so you think there's a possibility that by,
I think so. He's 24 okay. years old.
That's true.
I'm looking at his innings totals. He had 92 innings last year, around 93 innings the year before that. So, he's at 34 this year, so it's not like he's had a massive workload, so maybe they could be saving some of those bullets for the majors, right? Mm-hmm. That could make me, I could talk myself into that sort of narrative, but I don't know, man. I think that if you do have a spot, I could see holding Horton over him. I could see holding Mizrowski, but not many others, at least prospect wise in the minors, that I would want to stash over him.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it seems like a lot of the ones that were prospect eligible have either gotten called up.
They're up. Yeah.
Or something like Leiter where it didn't work out. Man, I sure wish the Cardinals with Tink Hentz,
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
And Peoria.
Cade Povich is another one. He does. He may be next. And I know Means had some elbow soreness today. He's actually leading AAA and K-minus BB. Has a 208 ERA, 258 FIP, 361 XFIP. So that I probably would hold Povich over Festa, mm-hmm. but it's close. I don't know if Povich, he is striking out 34% of the guys this year. So really impressive stuff from Povich. Mm-hmm. And he does have, 126 innings under his belt from last season. So, that may be the
foundation. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. That's a watch list one right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hentz is in AA, but it has been really good so far. By, Cardinals will find a way to mess it up. But 39 innings, 46 strikeouts, 318 ERA. But
Povich is in AAA too. Yeah. That should
So that's probably a good one over Festa. Very nice. All right. Well, Steve, we can open it up here, man.
We've never really had this, right? We've never really had
airtime, man. I mean, one of the questions that we had for Lance was talking about our favorite part about analysis. Mm-hmm. It's a question we've never really done Q&A, you and I, but we've been doing this now. This is our fourth season. What is your favorite part, Steve, about pitching analysis?
About pitching analysis, I don't know. It's something that I definitely feel like as I've done this, I've gotten better at. And I definitely think I'm better at finding, at least for fantasy, I'm better at building a pitching staff than I'm hitting. Even though I draft all these sort of earlies, my offense, at least this year, stinks. And I feel like I'm always complaining about offense and always trying to trade away pitching for offense because I have this excess in pitching. I think it's for me, and it's kind of like my philosophy, It's identifying a guy who is being drafted in the mid to late rounds, who becomes an ace that I don't want to draft next year. Right. Like that was,
they get too pricey.
The perfect one for me was McClanahan, right? Like drafting him in the 10th round, then he was a second round pick and like I'm out, or, you know, picking up Strider, him becoming a first rounder and then having no shares the next year. You know, guys like that for me right now, like for me this year so far, it's like a Monica, right? That's something that I'm, you know, riding high on, same with Jones, to a certain extent too. I know he's younger, so it's a little bit different. But yeah, I mean, I also, you know, have a lot of shares of like Grayson Rodriguez that I know he was hurt for a while, but it looks like he's ready to take that next step. Too, I know your boy, Bobby Miller, I think he's on the way back. I think he's going to take that next step, when he's back. And that's my favorite part. It's identifying the mid guy, the mid round guys and late round guys that break out. And I think that the way to do that is to read guys like Lance, is to read guys like Nick Pollock. You know, sure, I'm on Savant all day, but and I'm on, you know, Alex Chamberlain's pitch leaderboard. But there's a better way to digest that information when it's communicated to you in a way that Lance and Nick put it together. And that's sort of how I do it, with guys like Lance that we had, that we just had on, that we're lucky enough to have on. So, yeah, like that's my favorite part.
Yeah.
And being rewarded for when you get guys like that. Yeah.
That is awesome. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is, it really is a puzzle. And I think that's the cool part, even hearing Lance talk about it, where, you know, can't stress enough. And if you guys read his work, then you know what we're talking about. He is amongst the industry, like 99th percentile in terms of piecing that puzzle together. And even, you know, now there are names where he'll say like, I don't have the slightest clue, man. Like maybe you guys have an idea, or like, and Nick's like that too, where he'll reassess all the time. But like, you know, Ranger Suarez is the second best pitcher in baseball so far this season. It's like, what are we talking about? This, you know, a year ago, like Ranger Suarez was kind of like a Holly, you know, better than a Toby type of thing. And it's like, to me, that's such a cool thing. You know, the one I was proud of was like Justin Steele or like Nick Pivetta. But it's like, even when the industry is out, sometimes you can piece together, you know, reasons to be excited. And then even otherwise, like we have all these variables. We have these sliders. We have these red and blue things. We've got K minus BB and pitch mix changes. And even with all of that, there still are guys who just defy the odds based on the sport itself. And I think that's what's really, really cool, when you can start to find, you know, just reasons. And that's, like you said, it's stuff that Lance writes up about. You'll read it and be like, oh, what could he, you know, what is he doing? Oh, well, the changeup is, he's using it to attack lefties differently.
Yeah. In a different location. Like, yeah. Yeah.
You can't find that without running a ton of different, you know, splits, and you have to almost know what you're looking for. So those are definitely some really cool things that, you know, it doesn't get old, I think is the theme there. And it's why we keep doing it. So very, very cool. But Steve, yeah, floor's open if you want to hit on anything else. I was going to go to pitchers tonight that we could just kind of talk, because we also don't do a lot of real-time stuff, but like Cole Reagan's 12 strikeouts, shutout win against the Tigers. You brought up Max Fried had the complete game, one run against the Cubs. That's what Lance was fresh off of. Nine strikeouts there for Fried. Yeah, Scooble had kind of a bumpy outing.
I think there was some noise that he had a blister that he was battling with pre-start and couldn't throw the changeup. I'm actually going to bring that up if you riff a little bit more. I'm going to see how many changeups he threw to see if that actually... Yeah, I mean,
other things right now, like Michael King got the win tonight, which, again, you know, it's like 1 degree separated from the real game. I was just listening to Lance Brozdowski on that Dodgers one, that YouTube video. He has an interview clip with him talking to Michael King. It's just cool stuff. So Michael King, 6 strikeouts and 6 2/3 at Cincinnati. Gets the win
Scooble
there.
Scooble did throw 21 changeups, Only got 5 whiffs on it, though, for a 24 CSW. And I'll bring up his season stats on that as a comparison. So he was able to throw the changeup. It's just I'm not sure if he was able to use it as effectively as he could. The season whiff percentage on it is 45%. So close to half of the swings and misses he would get, and he only got 5 whiffs today. So clearly something was bothering him with that, even though he was able to throw it and just really didn't have the overall sharpness that we've seen from Scooble. So I think as long as that blisters, not a problem going forward, he'll be fine. Freed, yeah, it looks like Freed's like here, right? Like I feel like there was a lot of concern after the first few starts, right? Like his ERA was above 5 till a start versus the Marlins on April 23rd. It popped up back up after a bad start, not decent start against the Dodgers over 4, and now it's back down to 338. And it looks like, you know, any buy low window on Freed is closed.
There's still a buy low window. This is, might be the topic of the night, Steve. Blake Snell gives up 4 runs in 3 1/3 inning to the Pirates upon returning. I think some of that was from, it looks like a grand slam after he turned the ball over to a reliever. Yeah. So kind of on his tag. Yeah.
I would be all over Blake Snell as a buy low. He does this every single year.
15 swings and misses on 87 pitches. Yeah, I mean, that's honestly the 4 walks is annoying, but he was striking guys out for sure.
The only difference is that there's an IL stint in this. I'm not sure specifically if that last year in San Diego, or you know, that year in San Diego, I think it was 2022, where he had like a 5 ERA at the All-Star break and then finished with like a below 3 ERA. Mm-hmm. You were all over him that year and held on, I think. I don't know if there was an IL stint early on in the season. And also you have to couple it with the fact that he got a late start, which I think makes it even more of a buy low. And sure, like, you know, if he started his normal progression, maybe there wouldn't have even been an IL stint, because this would have came up in the middle of March. He would have like missed maybe the first week of the season when he actually got hurt here. Obviously, you know, that's a whole different timeline. You can't just make that assumption that's when he would get hurt. But you would think that could be the progression that he would have went through to have like a normal season. And he starts slow normally anyway, right? And he makes these changes and finds the right mix and gets the feel. Like he talked about last year, right? Like he was doing really well in the first half. He's like, I don't even have the feel for my slider yet. And then he got it, and then he had an amazing second half and went on to win the Cy Young. Like, it just seems like Blake Snell is the kind of guy that's always doing this tinkering that Lance talked about and isn't afraid to do it in season. And then once he finds the right one, he's going to get comfortable, like, you know, pitching half his home games in San Francisco. Blake Snell may be, like, my favorite buy low pitcher right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the manager who has him, I mean, his ERA is like an 11. So the manager who has him was waiting all this time.
Has to be frustrated, right? Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. I really think that this is a good option. And in his rehab starts, I think it was like, he had, I think it was something like 13 or 14 no-hit innings and like 15 strikeouts. So like, yeah, the Ks are there. And if he can get the walks in check, which seems like something that's like, shaking rust off a little bit. I love Blake Snell as a buy low on this. So, that's all good there. Well, Steve, I know, we didn't have a ton of time with Lance because the guy's just got a ton of stuff going on, but that was an absolute blast. Is there anything you wanted to close with before we wrap up here?
No, we got another awesome guest lined up for next week. I think we could spoil this one. It's in-house PL, Kyle Bland coming on next week. We're going to do a deeper dive into the bat speed metrics and have some more actionable advice and dig into some player names with that with Kyle. He's done
Kyle's
some amazing,
been on before. Clear the schedule, Steve, because that one, that could be an hour and a half. Kyle's just down to go there with us. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and unfortunately for him, his Avs are eliminated from the playoffs, so we won't have any time constriction for him to have to go watch the Avalanche game. Super pumped to have Kyle on next week. That'll be exciting. Anything you guys want to know, tweet us, email us, whatever.
Get selfish. If there's players on your team you want us to run a breakdown on, we're gonna have one of the better.
It doesn't have to even be with the bat speed stuff. Like, we're gonna get into it and talk about some of the cool things that he's done. He's built an app already with like swing acceleration, rolling swing charts, some stuff that is actually, is actually meaningful in season. Not that the bat speed metric isn't meaningful, but there is a lot of noise to it and it's new. But Kyle has put together some awesome things that you could use and consume and easily understand what you're looking at and actually use it. Like a rolling swing graph with swing speed, you're able to see, okay, this guy clearly, like, oh, he sat because he was banged up on May 4th. Like, what's his swing speed since then? It's gone down. Oh, like, he's clearly still battling something. Or this guy, worked on his swing and is developing more bat speed. Like, you're able to see that with Kyle's rolling charts. He also has an acceleration chart, which is something that a lot of people wanted to see, like how quickly your bat could speed up, essentially, which I think people, a lot of the smart people, thought that would be the most useful and thing they wanted to see from this data. And Kyle's already put together something to attack that. So super excited to have him on next week and talk all back into hitting, because I definitely need the help to find some hitters that'll help my squad after going 6-34 every night.
I heard that though, Steve. That said, I mean, just as the quick check-in, I feel like our leagues are going decently well. We talked NFBC that we're both, whether TGFBI, Raz Slam. Steve's in first place in our Raz Slam league. I'm in second. So if you guys are wondering if you're listening to the right show, look no further.
But look at our listener league, though.
Do not look at the listener league. Don't listen to the Goon Squad, any of that. In the home league, Steve, I'm in third place and on the healthy, four-game dominating streak. I'd say my pitching's amazing, but I think the entire league's pitching is amazing right now. So just quick check in. How's the home league doing over there for you?
It's the pitching's great. The hitting got hot for about 2 or 3 weeks there, and then the last week and this current week it's back to hitting below 200.
What are you
in
healthy seventh place looking to like eye a charge to the playoffs?
I'm in fourth right now, having a tough week so far. After hitting two homers last week, I know it's only Wednesday, but I only have one so far again. So it's where I don't even want to look at how the squad's doing. You've also jumped up to sixth tonight in our listener league. If you would look at that, you're representing well.
Wow.
Ben and Ben, the two Bens, Pernick and Bingham, are crushing it in first place, but it's pretty tight. Like, I know it's a 12 teamer, so it's a little different. So, but 87 points is in first, and then all the way down to seventh is 64th. So it's not that big of a spread, right?
Yeah, that's healthy. To bottom, dude, our draft champions. I'm fifth draft champions. Yeah. Listener League sixth. TGFBI fourth, Raz Slam third. So not terrible for here. Could be making a move in the home league third as well. So we'll stop there while we're ahead. But if you guys do want to add any names for the Kyle Bland show, cannot wait. That's going to be such a good one. You guys can tweet us. I'm at @van_verified. Steve is at @stav8818. Or you can email the show, winsabovefantasy@gmail.com. If you guys made it this far, of course, we always do the shameless plug. If you could go out, leave us a rating and a review, it goes a long way for us. Hopefully you guys enjoyed tonight's show. And next week should be awesome as well. So again, shout out to you, Steve, on lining up some awesome guests. This has been a fun way to spend May. So with that said, that wraps us up for episode 140, Wins Above Fantasy, How to Evaluate Pitchers with Lance Brozdowski. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys. Later.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Save big money on everything for your next project today at Menards. Transform your home in one weekend with exterior stain and sealer from Dutch Boy. It provides one coat protection on decks, fences, siding, and outdoor furniture, and repels rain after just 4 hours of application. That means quicker results, saving you both time and money. Check out our weekly flyer, plus other great deals happening this week on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.